So one of the topics that's come up in my life over the last few years, and I've even had some conversations with some folks about recently in my immediate circle, family and friends, has to do with ethical reasoning. Now, I think reasoning in general, at least amongst philosophers and scientists, can be a controversial topic. I think amongst computer scientists and cognitive psychologists, it can also be a kind of controversial topic. What does it mean to reason? What does it mean to apply some sort of method of thought to our experience in the world? That's a big topic, and I don't really want to podcast about that. There are plenty of smart people who deal with that topic, and anything I would provide would be at best a hybridization of derivative perspectives. So the question of reasoning itself is not the question I want to address right now, but there is another question, and that is beyond logical reasoning, beyond scientific method, beyond all of these tools we learn both in school and in the corporate world to solve problems. And I hope you can sense the sarcastic quotes in the air when I say solve problems. There is this question of ethical reasoning. Now, I gotta be honest with all you guys. I don't believe all of the fucking lip service that corporate America has paid to like a chief, ethics officer or whatever, someone who is gonna fucking be an ombudsman, whatever. All the fucking lip service fucking corporations have been doing really since the dot-com bust and Enron and, Sarbanes-Oxley and that fucking failure. And then you fast forward to 08 and the fucking post-08 fucking banking legislation that was the opposite of what it was purported to be. It actually created a massive protective wall for the most corrupt, scummy people that have ever lived. Hello, Jamie Dimon. Hello, Lloyd Blankfein. Go fuck yourselves. But this issue of ethical reasoning in the business world is not an issue people discuss. And also, as a libertarian and someone who values liberty, I'm as sensitive to the issues concerning human dignity and freedom that frankly don't fit into a bottom line. And with all due respect to all of you folks out there who poorly read Ayn Rand or only read Atlas Shrugged, you need to understand something. Ayn Rand would not have supported crony cutthroat capitalism. She would have supported liberty. She would have supported the government getting the fuck out of the way. And she probably would have wanted people, in ethical terms, to come to grips with where their beliefs come from. She was certainly no fan of the secular sort of alternative to Christianity, which is altruism. And certainly Ayn Rand wanted people to develop an ethos that I would say is self-centered, but not in the sense of selfishness, self-centered in the sense of focused on one's identity rather than on some nebulous community or collective goal. And I don't fully agree with Ayn Rand's perspectives, but I don't think her perspectives are really simplistic. I think people tend to trivialize Ayn Rand. And that's in part because, like I said, they read one or two of her books and they don't really get it. It's like Atlas Shrugged. You read Atlas Shrugged and you're led to believe that Ayn Rand was kind of an optimist in a way because the way the book ends, I mean, it's a horrible story, it's a dystopian story, but the way it ends, the Dagny Taggarts of the world and the Reardons and the fucking John Galt come out of their fucking, valley and they save the fucking planet, because it's all chaos now and people are waiting for, intelligent leadership. And these days we live in, if you've read Atlas Shrugged, they can feel like it. But here's the thing, I don't actually think that magical escape hatches are solutions. I don't believe in safe havens. I know that, Doug Casey has his little safe haven in like fucking Argentina or fucking Paraguay or Uruguay or some fucking place like that. I know Jim Willie lives in Costa Rica. I've known people recently who've gone to Costa Rica and have actually just immediately returned because that's no fucking solution. The reality is, whatever we're facing worldwide, this is not a problem for just the United States, a problem for everybody. It is a broken set of economic relationships. Certainly won't be repaired by more of the same, but that's most likely what's going to occur. So it is, to me, terribly obvious, absolutely obvious, that there's very little ethical reasoning in the business world. People don't ask questions like, is this the right thing to do? They ask questions that are appropriate, like, can we do it? Is it feasible? Will it actually produce a positive outcome in terms of the bottom line? But people don't really give a shit about the right and the wrong of things. You know, I, for one, more than a year ago, I was working on a project where I believed the business I was working for was taking grave risks with people's healthcare information, in part because they had such a haphazard plan of deploying a website they'd had for years to the World Wide Web, and it was really stupid. It was like, I couldn't believe how reckless a company could be. And it's almost as if the question of damage to other people, of other people's pain, is not even a concern. Now, so you know, there's like two kinds of corporations for me. There are corporations that exist within English or British common law that, frankly, the United States continued to recognize conceptually up until the 1850s and 60s. And then there's the concept of a corporation post-Civil War, and a corporation before the Civil War. And again, I don't want to get into the 14th Amendment and shit, because frankly, I don't buy into those fucking conspiracies. But I will tell you, post-Civil War, corporations were a period of about 50 years, more than a century, because it's still going on. Corporations have been granted progressively more and more rights of essentially being a citizen. And, you know, to me, treating a corporation like Google or Microsoft or any number of other corporations like a citizen, it would be like, and I know I've blogged and posted about this, but it would be like some alien, 700, you know, ton, 1,000, 2,000 foot tall alien with particle beam eyes and the ability to control all of our brains. I mean, essentially, it would be like some super giant monster being given the same citizenship rights I have. Now, here's the thing. If an alien showed up that was, you know, 1,000 feet tall and had laser beams for eyes, I'm not saying we should go nuke it. But the point is, I'm also not saying we should say, okay, you know, here's your fucking green card. I think you make a treaty with an entity like that, but you don't fucking make it a citizen. Now, English common law corporations were basically projects. I mean, let's be blunt. They were not corporations the way we understand it. Corporations were created in early American history to build fucking, you know, to build canal systems, to expand into the West. Corporations were used during the age of discovery and colonization of the United States to essentially grant British citizens the right to set up, you know, colonies, to set up, to set up communities in the New World. Those types of corporations had a beginning and an end, and they did not in any way have the semblance or the perspective, and no one even recognized them as being the equivalent of a citizen. No one would have ever said or believed that the corporate pacts that allowed the New World to be colonized were basically the equivalent of people. No one would have. That would have been crazy. They would have called you insane, I think. And I know I'm sort of moving a little way from the topic, but the reason why I'm making this point is that modern corporations have all of the strengths of gods, or at least demigods and demons, but apparently they also have exactly the same ethical model operating at their core. And because of that, when you give these things the kinds of rights that we have as individuals, they can do outlandishly horrible, disturbing things. A good example is Microsoft. Microsoft's had a campaign of bullshit for the last, I don't know, decade of the STEM shortage. That's science, technology, engineering. I'll let you on a little secret. Anecdotal, but also based on my own research and being in tech. There is no fucking shortage of engineers and scientists and technologists. However, there is a shortage of engineers with my experience willing to make $50,000 a year. That is a true statement. Now, some of you might say, well, Dan, that's a lot of money. Eh, that was a lot of money about 20 years ago. That isn't a lot of money today. Now, I make more than that because, according to people who know me, I'm worth more than that. But the truth is, the STEM shortage is not about a lack of technology professionals. It is about a lack of technology professionals willing to basically take a significant pay cut. If you go to Seattle, for example, like, you know, people think, oh, if you want to be in tech, go to Seattle, go to San Francisco, go to the Research Triangle. That's bullshit. You go to those places, you're going to get paid less. I moved to Indianapolis and I get paid more. And it's really not very complicated. When you go to Seattle, you're basically looking at a community of developers plus a community of foreigners. And I'm not anti-China or anti-India or anti-Indian people. But the bottom line is this. You're going to have a community of people who don't give a fuck about the U.S. Constitution, don't give a fuck about America, and are willing to work for $40,000 a year. And oh, by the way, finally, or in addition to this, I once spent about a month fixing some of the shittiest code ever written by a Chinese PhD student, a female Chinese STEM worker who supposedly had a computer science PhD. And it was some of the most god-awful code I'd ever seen in my entire fucking life. I have to put it up there with, you know, things like Amalg or I2B2 or that shitty code at Central Parking that kept overcharging people's credit cards. It was horrible. But she was a necessary STEM worker. So no, I think Microsoft behaves in a psychopathic way, you know, a sociopathic way. I think as a citizen, they couldn't give a shit about the truth and they couldn't give a shit about their community they live in. Most people in Washington State are that fucking stupid. They don't realize that Microsoft, maybe back in the 80s, they were focused on community with respect to Washington State and shit like that. Microsoft doesn't give a shit about Washington State. I'd be willing to bet that in 10 years, Microsoft is gone from Washington State. Wake the fuck up. So these corporations, they have no ethos. They have no soul. And as I said, what's worse is that people in the liberty movement, who should, I think, be asking these questions, because people are going to ask us those questions because they're going to hear the propaganda of the Bill Maher's and other fucking idiots and the fucking Krugmans about how libertarians just want to watch poor people die in the streets, which is a load of fucking horseshit. And oh, by the way, poor people are dying in the streets right now. So it's essentially a distinction without a fucking difference. It is a question, though. Is anything, for example, is anything in the world, or I should say, does everything in the world have a price? That's a simple question. Does everything in the world have a monetary value? Like, can you take human life and say a human life is worth this amount of money? I don't know how you do that. I know there are mathematicians who work for lawyers and fucking law firms who figure that shit out when they're, you know, suing corporations, but yeah, what is a life worth? And if you want to understand where we should begin with respect to business ethics, that's kind of where we should start, in my opinion, because there is no community without individuals. There is no nation, no economy without people. And ultimately, each person is going to participate in this particular process. And each person is going to ask the question, what am I worth? I'm inclined to believe that human life is, for all intents and purposes, priceless. But that doesn't mean that human life is treated that way. It just means that from my perspective, in a world where we treat human life as cheap and throwaway, and in some sense, if you've made 7 billion copies of human life, and you're up against, you know, the carrying capacity of the planet Earth, maybe from one perspective, we are throwaway. But I see nothing throwaway about human beings. I see nothing throwaway about human life. That doesn't mean I'm some far-right Christian who wants to stand outside an abortion clinic all day. It just means that when I begin the question of how do I reason about ethics in the business world, I start from the basis of me personally. And I'm not saying this is you. You don't have to do this. Oh, come on. Sorry about that. Sarah McLachlan. Anyways, when I begin the process, I start from that basis. That is where I begin. It doesn't have to be where you begin. But the beginning of my questioning about what I do at a job, you know, what I consider right, what I consider wrong, It begins with this idea that human life is precious. And then it goes further. For me personally, this is my perspective. I believe human life and its value requires dignity, which means, you know, respecting oneself and ultimately respecting others. And it requires liberty, because you can't really make choices to respect oneself or others unless you're free to. I don't think societies have to be complex, but they certainly are these days. But that's where I begin, you know. And as you move through that process, and to make this a practical conversation, as you move through that process and you find yourself in the business world, and you're confronted, for example, with a scenario where a company wants to put a website on the web that contains healthcare data, but you know it's not ready. That's a scenario. That's a worthy ethical scenario to talk about. I actually went through it. I believe I did the right thing, but I'm fairly convinced everybody above me fucked that one up. Another one is the case of the whole Microsoft Amalga thing. Like, there are lots of examples of cronyism in the last decade, and I certainly think Amalga is not the worst example, but it is a crony example. It was quote-unquote meaningful use money from the fucking stimulus, whatever the fuck that means. And it really was like writing a check to one of the most corrupt corporations in the world. Now, in that situation, I could have kept my mouth shut. What I actually did is went to the Seattle Times. It didn't do anything. It had zero effect, but that was the right thing to do. It was the right thing to do, and it was the right thing to resign. So when people ask me, you know, hey, Dan, your values are so great, but do you practice them? I do. But here's the other thing, too. It is kind of easy, and it is, well, not kind of, it's actually really easy to live the high and mighty moral life. And so, you know, I don't think I'm that good a person. I just think the standards have dropped so far. It's kind of like the credit score thing. I've had personal bankruptcy, and I arrived in Indianapolis with the shit that would fit on a fucking Amtrak ride. But according to the real estate, you know, hypnotherapist, multi-tiered pyramid schemist in Washington State, I have a better credit score than anyone else in my family. And yet, if I look at my life, I'm only a few months away from being homeless. If I lost my job, I don't own a home. I really don't own my car. You know, I don't really have a lot of stuff. And that doesn't bother me, because I've always valued people over stuff. But in many ways, it's easier for me to make these choices because of my perspective and the fact that I don't have kids. So if I had kids, I don't honestly know if I would have done the things I've done in the last, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 years. I really don't know. It's plausible. I mean, it's possible. It's possible that one can maintain their values and still maintain their protection for their children. But these days, people who have values are marginalized and sometimes attacked and ultimately pushed aside. What the systems want, ultimately what the quote-unquote business world wants, and again, I'm using sarcastic quotes because to me it's more like fascism than business. It's a lot like the state capitalism described by, you know, Marcuse. But what business and sarcastic wants these days is for people to just do their fucking jobs and not ask a fucking question. So if you want to think about what business learned from the dot-com bust, what business learned from 08, business learned nothing. Business got worse. Business actually became more of a sociopath than a psychopath. And those of us who know this and see this are kind of powerless to stop it, because we're not talking about everyday citizens. These are not normal citizens. These are like 1,000-foot tall, you know, several hundred ton, you know, carbon steel, carbon fiber, Kevlar protected monstrosities wielding battle axes and laser beams. These are not people like you and I. And when you add that to the fact that they apparently don't have a conscience or care about these types of questions, right and wrong, well, that's a formula for destruction. Anyways, I don't know what ethical reasoning process you all go through, you know. It's up to you. It's a personal choice. But I think it is important to go to have some kind of process if you have a soul or some semblance of a conscience. I think you do have to ask yourself, where do you draw the line? How far would you go? If your boss told you to do something that you knew would harm one or more people, and I don't just mean harm in terms of, you know, make them feel bad. I mean, you know, poison them, hurt them physically, lead to them losing their jobs, for example. If you know or you are being asked to do something that leads to harm and has very little rational business utility, what would you do? Would you do it? Would you, you know, dump the fucking toxic waste in the river? Would you, you know, fudge the numbers on the pharmaceutical study so people think the drug's safe when in fact it's going to cause you to bleed out? What would you do? And you should think about that, because in the years to come, as things get meaner, and they are going to get meaner because, you know, the pie is shrinking, whether we like it or not, in the years to come, these decisions are going to be a lot less abstract for most of us. And the rare, or rather, personal experiences of Daniel John Sullivan are going to be a lot more common, and probably already are. So anywho, I don't want to spend much more time on this, but I do think it's worth pondering or meditating upon the question of how do you as a person, how do we as people in the business world incorporate ethical reasoning into the rest of the reasoning? And does it ever really happen? I've seen very little evidence of it at leadership levels. I've practiced it myself, but, you know, that just doesn't work. If you're in an institution and you're the only person that knows it's wrong to put people's healthcare data at risk, or rather, when you tell that to people so that it's not a question of technical knowledge, you say you will be putting people's healthcare data at risk, and you basically get these glossy eyes like, why does that fucking matter? Yeah. What do you do?